On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support of WBUR. Please pledge online at WBUR.org or by calling 1-800-909-9287.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. To hear The New Yorker's Seymour Hersh tell it, the U.S. bombers are practically on the runway, revved and loaded, ready to strike Iran. Tehran is planning a pilot program in uranium enrichment, a big step on the road to nuclear weapons this spring. And the Bush White House, Hersh reports, is determined to stop it. Military planning is in high gear. Regime change is again the battle cry. A U.S. nuclear attack is on the table. Yesterday, President Bush responded, "Wild speculation," said the president. "Diplomacy is the way." But the air is crackling in Washington. Up next on Point, Seymour Hersh and voices hot and cold on battle plans for Iran and how far off the shelf they've come. Later this hour, we'll be joined by more key voices in the Iran debate in Washington policy circles. But first, we're joined by investigative reporter Seymour Hersh in Washington. His story in this week's New Yorker magazine is headlined, "The Iran Plans." Seymour Hersh, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
You've got the president responding pretty much directly to you, saying wild speculation. How about it?
Well, it's not. I mean, it's he may think it is, of course, but it's not. It's the fact is that planning, of course, there's always contingency planning in any government. We always plan for everything, and we should be. But what I'm writing about is a ratcheting up of the planning into what they call into the operational phase, which is the next step up, in which the military is really coming up with very specific proposals or scenarios, whatever word you want to use, for the president. And eventually the next step would be for the president to pick one line of attack, and then they would give a warning order, and you'd begin to collect the airplanes and the ordnance and the people, and then you give an execute order. It's a step up.
Now, what exactly are you saying? You're saying that Iran is moving toward enriching uranium. They're going to begin a pilot program this spring, and the Bush administration believes that cannot happen. Now, it's already the middle of April. So if Iran's going to do it this spring and the Bush administration says no way, that means we're talking in the next matter of weeks or tiny number of months.
Well, that's it. I mean, if you take the president at his word, and after Iraq, I think, unfortunately, we all have to. And the president has said a couple of things about Iran in the last few weeks. Also, the vice president has said pretty much the same thing. He said, as you said in the introduction, if they move to the next step of beginning a pilot program for enrichment, and this is at a facility called Natanz, which is 75 feet underground, a few hundred miles from Tehran, a very hard-to-get-to target. If they do that, and Iran claims it has a legal right to do so under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, to which it is an adherent, a member, and I don't think people dispute it, they have a legal right. If he does that, it's a red line. He's also said publicly in the last few weeks, twice, that if even Iran getting the knowledge, the wherewithal, the knowledge to go to this next step and begin to enrich uranium and put together a weapon would be a red line. And, of course, this kind of talk, and he's also, again, he's said a few times that he is not ruling out any option, and we all know what that means. That's essentially you could call it a nuclear threat if you want, and I think that's a fair thing to call it. That's the implication. Cheney has used the exact same phrase recently. Mm. And so if I'm the Iranians, people have told me, I say to myself, which, by the way, most people believe is interested in developing a nuclear weapon capability. Mm-hmm. I'm saying to myself, thank God I'm doing this. Let's hurry along.
You have talked with a lot of anonymous sources in and around the Pentagon here. Paint a picture of the sort of frenzy of planning that they describe to you as going on. And what do the plans look like?
Well, we don't know what the plans look like. I mean, you know, that would be a step for people that have read. It doesn't matter what the plans look like, because none of us would want to get in the position of talking openly about plans. I do write in the New Yorker that we have sent troops on the ground inside Iraq. American troops are there now, among other things, making contact with the various dissidents groups inside the anti-Mullah, anti-clerical leadership groups inside Iran, the Azeris, the Baluchis, the Kurds. And also, one of their missions, of course, of the American troops is to be able to paint, that is, point a laser at a target in case of bombing, because our bombings, the accuracy of our bombing is dependent on laser-guided weapons. Once the bomb or the missile is guided into the target, you can get within 10-meter accuracy. So you need people on the ground, and that's going on now, which is an interesting step. That's beyond the contingency business. And more than that, as I write about again this week, there's an incredible sort of dispute. It's a complicated dispute, and I'll tell in a minute what it is, simply that when the Pentagon initially approached the problem of what to do about the Iranian nuclear threat or whatever is going on inside Iran, if you want to destroy an underground bunker, when they present the options or the scenarios to the president, one of them, of course, would have to be do nothing. Another one would be if you want 100% guarantee of taking out this system, you would have to use a TAC nuke.
A tactical nuclear weapon that could penetrate at sufficient depth to hit these deep reinforced underground bunkers where the nuclear research is going on. You report that has been proposed, that it was put on the table at the White House. Now the Pentagon wants to take it off the table. The White House has resisted.
And with creating an enormous amount of tension inside the senior planning staffs of the Pentagon, because they do not think that option belongs on the table. It's a completely irrational option. And they have gone to the president. And right now, as my understanding is, as I write, that within a few weeks, there's been a commitment made by the senior officials, military men, that they will formally tell the president in a document that this is not acceptable. And at that point, they think the president has to walk back that issue. But if the president insists on keeping this in the plan, if it stays in the plan, I also write, and I understand that these are anonymous sources and this is a serious allegation, I write that some senior officers have told their superiors they will resign over that issue. They see it as a moral and an ethical issue. And underneath all of this is this point, that there is a disconnect now between some of the senior leadership and the civilian leadership in the military, senior leadership in the military and senior civilian leadership in the Pentagon and the White House. There's no question about it. We've had now three generals, retired generals in the last few months, come out publicly criticizing Rumsfeld, in some cases spreading that criticism into the White House. There's a problem. We have a military that isn't totally comfortable with the leadership right now.
Cy Hirsch, you say you're not laying out the actual operational battle plan here, and yet there's a lot of talk in your piece about what it might look like. You quote at some length Colonel Sam Gardner, a military analyst who taught at the National War College, a speech he gave in Berlin about what a U.S. attack on Iran might look like. He estimates at least 400 targets would have to be hit. Like what?
Well, you'd have to hit, if you're going to do it right, and the Air Force planning, one would assume, would include this. One of the things we don't want to see is American boys being paraded through the streets of Tehran after a bombing mission. We want no more prisoners of war, as we suffered with during in the Vietnam War.
So it's all air war, not really much on the ground at all?
Oh, absolutely. Very little. There might be some small commando raids. If you hit an underground bunker hard, you want to send maybe a team in to make sure that you've done what you want to do, which is destroy totally. But that would be a very minor component. There was a lot of thinking about going the sabotage route, pretty much large-scale sabotage inside the country, and I think that's been pretty much discounted as not feasible. Iran's got a lot of good defenses. And anyway, the point is,
but he's talking about hitting 14 airfields with sheltered aircraft, cruise missile sites, Iranian diesel submarines, chemical plants, chemical production plants. 400, is that – surely Iran would see that as war, as full war.
Well, I mean, what else is it? And also, he really uses the word aim points, too, in his paper. And Sam has been out of the service for years. He was a planning officer. He's done a lot of war games. And I was glad he wrote the paper because it enabled me to write without getting into a lot of detail that we don't want to get into, what kind of plan it would look like. And certainly you'd have to get rid of, you don't want airplanes flying against your bombers. Mm-hmm. And you don't want, Iran has, as some of the audience knows, produces 4 million barrels a day of oil and has enormous reserves, enormous financially, it's in very solid positions, been buying a lot of advanced radar systems and anti-missile systems and anti-war plane systems from the Chinese and the Russians.
So we're not talking a powder puff here. Cyrus, we've just got one more minute with you, and I want to ask you this. Of course, there's a kind of two-pronged deal going on here. There's the diplomatic effort, and there's the military threat. Do you have any fear that you are being used with your Pulitzer Prize and all your investigative history, that you're being used as a kind of cat's paw here to kind of raise the unofficial pressure on the government in Tehran?
I sort of wish they'd be that clever, but the fact of the matter is that, of course, I worried about it. And as I said, I've been around a long time, and I only deal with people I know, and nobody's proffered anything to me. This all came from sources I've dealt with for some cases 25, 30 years, people inside. And and you know how careful The New Yorker is in its fact-checking. We're very confident that that's not an issue, although I will say in general, the Iranians certainly look at it that way, that this is a provocation. And you know, I wrote about 14 or 15 months ago in The New Yorker, I wrote another piece saying that Iran was still very much in the president's sights. And at that time, Iran responded the same way it's responding now. This is all just American hyping.
Seymour Hersh, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
We've just heard from Seymour Hersh at The New Yorker magazine. His reporting is stirring up a lot of comment and response across the country these days. There's been another big stick put in here recently from Joseph Cirincione, Director of Nonproliferation at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, author of Deadly Arsenals, Nuclear, Biological, and Chemical Threats, a big figure in the security world. He wrote very recently that he used to think the Bush administration was not serious about a military strike on Iran. He says he's changed his mind. He joins us now from Washington. Joseph Cirincione, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
So now, you wrote about this in Foreign Policy not long ago at all. It's just gotten to be a bigger hubbub since then. Are you still sticking with your observation? You said, what I previously dismissed as posturing, I now believe may be a coordinated campaign to prepare for a military strike on Iran. Are you sticking with that, Joe?
Yes, I am. Up until a few weeks ago, I had dismissed talk about military strikes in Iran as, you know, left-wing blogger chatter, and you know, I didn't take it too seriously. And then people started coming to me telling me what they told Cy Hersh, that there are serious discussions going on, most of it centered around the vice president's office, that the planning in the Pentagon has moved from the sort of standard contingency planning to something more serious, and that at least some people in the administration had decided that the military option was their only option as a way to deal with Iran. And then I started listening to what the administration was saying, and I'm seeing the same game plan unfold as appeared to unfold in the months before the Iraq war. And the parallels are so striking, I can no longer dismiss it. I now believe that the administration, at least some of the senior leadership in the administration, is very serious about going to war with Iran.
But if we look back to the Iraq, the months, as you say, that led up to the Iraq war, there were many of them. Now, if you take Cy Hersh at his word, and I'm curious what you have to say about this, he says that this pilot program in enriching uranium is effectively Washington's red line. Well, we've got the former president of Iran saying today, this is Hashemi Rafsanjani, saying that Iran has enriched uranium for the first time. This is the first news of this. He's just coming out for the first time using 164 centrifuges, major development in its fuel cycle technology. So I don't feel time for that months of, you know, diplomacy and then in we go, if that's the red line.
Well, a couple of quick things to say. First, on Cy Hersh's article, I've read it now several times in depth. I think it's an excellent article. And if there's something wrong in there, people should come and point out what's wrong. Instead, you're having the standard administration attack to all their critics. They're trying to diminish and dismiss Cy Hersh. I don't think you can do that with a guy of his caliber. So the president says yesterday, oh, it's wild speculation. Mm-hmm. Note, he doesn't deny it. He doesn't repudiate it. He doesn't say we're not planning to attack Iran. He just tries to brush his critic aside.
Well, he said prevention doesn't necessarily mean force. It can mean diplomacy, and it does mean diplomacy this time, he said.
Right. We've learned that we have to parse administration's statements very carefully. I was one of the last people in Washington who believed the president when he said that diplomacy was his preferred means for dealing with Iraq. And we now know that for a year before we went to war, that's exactly what they were planning. So you cannot trust what this administration is saying. We may live in a democracy, but we do not have an open government. There really are secret plans and hidden agendas, and it's our responsibility to dig them out and have an open public debate about it. I applaud Cy Hirsch for his efforts to do that.
We're going to hear pushback on just that front, but let me ask you this, because this is such kind of alarming news at coming at such speed. If this is a red line, if it's crossed, what are you saying? That we're days away from an attack like this? Do we really have that capacity?
No.
Does that make sense at all?
No, that doesn't. And, you know, part of the problem with this administration is they so badly bungled our policy towards Iran that our situation deteriorates week by week. We've had numerous opportunities over the last 5 years to settle this nuclear issue, to negotiate with Iran. They've been coming to us on at least 3 occasions offering to have talks. We're the ones who refuse to talk to them.
Offering to have talks, but that doesn't mean settling it necessarily. They look pretty determined to have a nuclear weapon, do they not?
They are certainly on a path to acquiring the technology that would allow them to have a nuclear weapon, but they are a good 5 to 10 years away from being able to enrich uranium in quantities either for fuel or for a bomb. Who says that? That's our national intelligence estimate. The intelligence estimate of the United States is that Iran is 5 to 10 years away. The director of National Intelligence, John Negroponte, just confirmed that in testimony 2 months ago to the Senate that Iran was unlikely to have a bomb before 2015. So we're not actually in a rush on that front. There isn't an immediate threat of an Iranian bomb this month, this year, or even this decade. Now,
may not be in a rush, but others may be.
Yes. That's because the agenda isn't really about the nuclear weapon. It's about the regime itself. And that's what Tsai's getting at, and that's what I believe the administration agenda is. They want to remove the regime. The nuclear issue is the rationale for doing that.
So there are two issues there. What do you believe the consequences of a U.S. military strike on Iran would be, Joseph Cerincione?
Absolutely devastating. As James Fallows writes in the Atlantic Monthly, it would be ruinously self-defeating.
Why?
Think about what this would mean. This would be their 9/11. When we talk about strikes and aim points, this is war. We would be preemptively attacking another country. This would be their 9/11 and Pearl Harbor wrapped into one. Of course, the Iranian public's going to rally around the government, as any people would do, even though this government is very unpopular.
So what if they rally around the government? The government's not toppling now, so they get some more support?
Well, what that means is, you know, any idea that somehow a strike would be a blow to this regime that would encourage a democratic uprising is just fantasy talk. But that's what some people who favor a nuclear option believe. They believe that this helps topple the government. Nonsense. It's exactly the reverse. It guarantees Ahmadinejad another 5 years of power.
And the cost to the United States of that flame you describe?
Absolutely, yes.
What is the cost? What would it be?
Well, you get Muslim anger rising throughout the world. You get the U.S. Reputation plummeting even further. You probably get Shia uprisings in southern Iraq. Muqtada Sadr, one of the heads of the largest militias in Iraq, has already pledged that if Iran is attacked, he will defend Islam, in his words. You might get the Shia-dominated government in Iraq simply ordering us out. Of course, Iran has numerous options itself that it could undertake, either direct military action against U.S. assets or against shipping in the Straits of Hormuz, or using Hezbollah or other agents to conduct terrorist attacks against the United States or possibly Israel. Oh, by the way, have I mentioned that oil goes to $100 a barrel and your gasoline starts costing $5 a gallon? You think gas prices are high now? Wait till you start another war in the Middle East.
So
that probably means the Western economies go into recession. That's just the beginning, by the way. Mm. A strike against Iran is the beginning of a war. It's not the end of this conflict.
We'll talk about that. Joe Cerincione, let me begin to bring our listeners in. William's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, William. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Mr. Hirsch, I'm not sure I understand why, if he's correct, we are bringing this out now, and if he is wrong, why we're bringing this out now. I don't see the gain for the United States in a national security sense in bringing this to the front right now. I don't get it.
Well, let me put it to you, William. If Cy Hirsch is right, and the President of the United States says he's not, says he's wildly speculative, but if he's correct, if Joe Cerincione is correct, and the U.S. might soon launch a major strike on Iran. Do you want to know about it in advance? Do you want to discuss it or not?
If I am part of the military, I certainly don't want it discussed.
Joe Cirincione?
I think we still live in a democracy, and it's up to the citizens of this country to decide who we go to war against. I think this would be a disaster, so it's in the interest of the nation to have this discussion now, to unfold the entire package. Let's declassify the national intelligence estimate of the Iranian program. Let's get all this out in a calm way to discuss it now instead of having it sprung upon us in October or March of next year.
Sam is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Sam, you're on the air.
Well, I'm scared, and my parents, thanks for taking the call. And as to why now, let me just suggest that Bush is the lowest. I wouldn't be surprised that he's leaking this at the lowest point of his administration, with all sorts of local problems, to bring up the old scare card again. And I will just say that someone mentioned this was a slow mo towards the Cuban Missile Crisis, and we had Kennedy and Khrushchev then, both, including Khrushchev, who banged his shoe, was eminently rational compared to Bush and Ahmadinejad, who are both having problems in their own countries and are both crazy, and this thing scares me.
So you don't feel the same rational foot on the pedal. Sam, thanks for your call. Joe Cirincione, please stand by. I want to welcome another voice into our conversation from Washington. Rule Mark Gorecht joins us. He's a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, formerly a director with the Project for New American Century, a kind of neoconservative think tank. He's author of The Islamic Paradox, contributing editor to the Weekly Standard. Rule Mark Gorecht, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Let me see where to begin. First of all, where do you stand on Cy Hirsch's reporting? Do you know, do you think that it's gone operational, that we're close to, potentially close to, a military strike on Iran? And would that be a good idea?
No, not at all. I think Cy Hirsch's piece has probably produced a bit of giggles, actually, over at the Department of State, which really runs Iran policy, and I suspect the same reaction, perhaps a little bit more anger, is over at CENTCOM, where General John Abizade is responsible for the Middle East.
Why anger?
Well, because it's so ludicrous. I mean, I think it is true that that CENTCOM in particular has started theoretical. Wargaming is a bit much. I think they're considering two different possibilities in the future. One is that Iran gets nuclear weapons, and what is the force structure that the United States should have? Should we consider redeploying forces, et cetera, et cetera? How do you deal with a nuclear theocracy? And the second is, theoretically, if the United States were to actually have a preventive military strike, what might that entail? But that in no way, shape, or form implies what you might call civilian approval. This is the responsibility of the CENTCOM commander to have such theoretical discussions. He would be negligent if he didn't have them. What you can say for sure and certain is that the Iran policy debates, which are run by the State Department, are not there at all. They are much more in line with dedicated to the diplomatic approach. I mean, John Bolton is handcuffed. What might actually be it's so far away from that. I mean, what is a serious discussion for the Department of State now is, you know, can you get more Iranians' visas to the United States, not whether you're going to nuke them.
Rule Mark, there's a lot I want to ask about there, but let me ask you this first. Do you think, nuclear weapons in the hands of Iran, that's a very serious matter. Do you think the United States has to have a military option here?
Oh, sure. I mean, I actually don't object at all. I mean, I think Cy Hirsch's rather hyperbolic piece actually perhaps could serve some good if the administration knew how to properly handle it publicly. And that is, there's no reason why the United States doesn't play, to a certain extent, a bad cop. I mean, the EU3, the French, the Germans, and the Brits have complained, at least the French have complained, admit they have some rhetorical fun out of this, that the Americans have actually forgotten that they have to play the bad cop, that you cannot have a successful negotiations with the Iranians unless you have some element of intimidation in there. And the United States has actually had precious little of it, that you walk away from it. If you mention preventive military strikes over at the Pentagon or at the Department of State, I mean, it's a very impolite thing to do. and it's quite unsociable. And I must say on the vice president's office, I mean, the vice president, except for his one speech, I mean, internally, his office has disappeared from the Iran debate.
Joe Cirincione, join us here. This description is just kind of a mirror image of what Cy Hirsch puts forward, a bit of what I hear you putting forward. Rumar Karek says, look, it's the Pentagon leading, not the civilians. That's the opposite of what we generally hear, that states in charge, not Rumsfeld, that it's all theoretical, not close to operational. What do you say, Joe?
I think there's a fierce debate inside the administration about which way to go. I do believe that there are pragmatists in the State Department that aren't focused on the diplomatic effort, which is deeply in trouble at this point. I think there are more of the neoconservative voices, of which Raoul is a member, who are arguing that we have to be more forceful, that we have to back up our diplomacy with military. And there are some who have already gone over and decided, look, the diplomacy is not going to work. Iran is not going to be stopped. Military option is the only option. And I include members of the vice president's office in that. I don't believe they've disappeared from the debate. I think that the circle of people who are making decisions on this is not large, and the vice president's office is certainly within that circle. Nothing is determined yet. That's why it's all the more important to have a public discussion about this. We cannot make the same mistake again.
Rumar Karek, Rafsanjani says today that the enrichment of uranium has begun. What's the red line, in your view, where diplomacy must be seen to have failed, and in your view, a military option must be taken? How far can this nuclear development go in Iran before, in your view, that's necessary?
Well, I mean, I think diplomacy has probably already failed. I mean, it's worthwhile to play this out, and we don't really have to wait long. I mean, the general strategy, I think, for the American government has been that and this is the State Department, by the way, is that, you know, we are going to give the United Nations process probably about 3 months, no more than that. It's pretty evident already the Chinese and the Russians are going to block it. We'll then give the Europeans probably another 3 months. The French are actually in the lead. They have proven themselves surprisingly tough on this issue to see whether they can implement any type of sanctions regime that could have a bite. I think there is a certainly theoretical awareness in Europe that if they're going to do this, they have to have larger sanctions in the beginning that have some possibility.
So 3 months plus 3 months, does that mean, in your view, we're 6 months away from what might be the necessary time?
Not at all. I mean, the way the United States does this, the same true as with Iraq. I mean, you're going to have, it's going to be like John Philip Sousa on top of an aircraft carrier. I mean, the United States doesn't do anything subtle or clandestine.
Mark Gorecht is a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Rule Mark Gorecht, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Saeed's on the line right now from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Saeed, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the Ayatollahs in Iran cannot be negotiated away from nuclear weapons. And the reason I say that is because of the domestic considerations. The Islamic Republic now is a minority that is ruling over a very unwilling majority, and nuclear weapons are essential to their survival.
Not such an unwilling majority. The country's being governed. It's not in rebellion.
Iran is in a pre-revolutionary state as we speak, and that is a fact that is underappreciated in the West.
And you're saying that the opponents of the clerical rule there have a revolution bubbling under their feet.
Exactly, and the force that is being the Iranian nationalism is the single most significant force that can oppose radical Islamism in Iran.
What does that say to you about what U.S. strategy should be here, Saeed? We're talking diplomacy or military?
The one issue that cannot be tolerated is nuclear weapons in the hands of the Islamic Republic, because that will the first victim of that actually will be the Iranian people.
And if the U.S. goes in militarily, then what happens to the political situation in Iran? Do they rally around their clerics because they are their leaders and the country's under attack, or do they welcome the Americans with candy and flowers?
That is a very difficult – the answer to that is almost impossible to know. However, if military options are taken, they should be taken in such a way as to side with the Iranian people against the Ayatollahs. That is, we should definitely come – the solution in Iran is regime change by the Iranian people. the gravest mistake that the United States could make is to fall for the grand bargain proposal, where we come to some understanding with the Ayatollahs, where we and the victim in that is the cause of freedom.
We hear it, Saeed. You're very articulate with it, and we appreciate your call, Joseph Cirincione. How about it? Saeed says it's inevitable. There's no talking the current Tehran government out of its nuclear ambitions.
I think Saeed's is very articulate, and that is exactly the thinking that's going on inside the administration. You have to understand that there are lots of people coming to the administration now with stories just like Saeed's. We have Iranian dissidents. We have the exiled son of the Shah. We have insurgent groups representing various ethnic constituencies in Iran, now getting training, getting arms from the U.S. There's all these Iranians coming very much like the Iraqi exile community came with Ahmed Chalabi to the administration, spinning these stories about a pre-revolutionary situation. And a large part of the administration is buying it, I got to say, again, particularly the vice president's office. And you hear the passion in Saeed's voice. That's how people talk about it, some people inside the administration.
Deja vu doesn't mean he's wrong necessarily, though a lot of antenna are up here. Can the U.S. bomb its way into friendship with the Iranian people?
Well, obviously not. I mean, that's a huge mistake. But if you start off with the premise that, one, you can't stop it, you can't negotiate them out of it, then what do you do exactly? That drives you to the military option. And you don't want to, and this is the current administration position, reward Iranian bad behavior by having these negotiations. You heard Saeed warn against a grand bargain. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about, negotiation. So if you rule out negotiations and you say a nuclear weapon is intolerable, that your only choice left is the military option.
Joining us from Washington is Patrick Clausen. He's Deputy Director for Research at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. It's been generally supportive of Bush administration policies in the Middle East. He's co-editor of Getting Ready for a Nuclear-Ready Iran and Checking Iran's Nuclear Ambitions. He's long advocated regime change, as I believe, in Iran. Am I right on that, Patrick Clausen?
Yes, and so does the New York Times today. The New York Times editorial today says that regime change is the best policy to get rid of Iran's nuclear weapons.
Can diplomacy deter Tehran's current regime from developing nuclear weapons?
Absolutely, and we're actively involved in that diplomacy and having a whole lot of success at it. Joe has carefully left out all the discussions about the successes that we've had in bringing the Europeans and increasingly the Russians to share our concerns about Iran's nuclear program.
Do you believe they'll ultimately be successful, that Iran will pull back from developing nuclear weapons on the basis of the diplomacy underway now?
We've got a good chance, but that's only if diplomacy is backed up by pressure and, in extreme case, by force. That is the advice of the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency's Nobel Peace Prize-winning director, Alberadai. His exact words were, we have rules. We have to do everything possible to uphold the rules through conviction. If not, then we have to impose them with force. That's what the head of the UN agency says, is that we have to have plans ready for using military force.
So you believe that the U.S. has to sort of have its hand on its pistol, down by the holster, to get Iran talk?
No. People like Cy Hirsch and Joe Cirincione, who bitterly criticized the Bush administration for not having detailed plans for what to do in Iraq, are now upset that the United States is preparing detailed plans if it has to use military force. Can't have it both ways. If you want to have the administration have detailed plans for when force becomes necessary, they got to start working on it years in advance. Plans don't pop up out of nowhere. They got to be worked on in great detail, and all the difficult questions have to be thrashed out.
Joe Cirincione, how about it? This is necessary planning if you want to be serious about dealing with Tehran. It's just planning.
Well, that, of course, is absurd. Nobody's criticizing the administration for not having detailed military plans for how to deal with Iraq. What we're criticizing the administration for is not having any idea of what to do once they won the military battle, which was really never in question. The mistake here is keeping this military option on the table. It is a loser. It hurts our negotiating position. It drives our allies away from us. So many of our allies now, who we have convinced to take a tougher line on Iran, are now worried that our real agenda is regime change, that they don't want to be set up again like they were on Iraq. So they're distancing themselves from any actions that would appear to justify the use of force, for example, UN resolutions that would impose sanctions. So that's why when Jack Straw, the UK foreign minister Jack Straw, says that a nuclear attack on Iran is absolutely nuts, that's a good thing to say. Why doesn't our Secretary of State say that? Why doesn't the President say that? Let's start ruling out some of these crazy options instead of pretending that somehow keeping them on the table improves our situation. It doesn't. It makes it harder to get diplomacy to work.
Patrick Claussen, let me ask you, can you see a picture in which military strike on Iran has more positive than negative outcomes? And what would that look
Absolutely.
Like?
Absolutely.
What would that look like?
If Iranian President Ahmadinejad, which he's quite capable of doing, were to announce that he plans to that he has a nuclear weapon and he plans to use it, and that he's not going to tell us where he's going to explode it. He might explode it in New York. He might explode it in Israel. Then I would say that the use of military force against Iran would probably be a pretty good idea. In other words, it's because Iran is capable of doing some very aggressive things that we have to have military options ready. This is a guy who, as the German chancellor has warned us, he uses the kind of extreme language that Hitler used. And people didn't take Hitler seriously and said, oh, you don't have to listen to that kind of hot air. Well, as a matter of fact, we should have. So maybe we should listen to what Ahmadinejad says when he says we will rule the world and we will wipe Israel off the map. We have to be prepared for the possibility that he might actually try to do that. In that case, we ought to think about using military force to stop him before he can act.
John's calling from Newbury, Massachusetts. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. Thanks for taking my call. Great discussion. I'm going to take your lead from that and ask your speaker, where does Israel stand in all this? And if you're thinking what I mean by that, do they beat us to the punch?
You mean does Israel strike Iran before the United States does?
Yep.
Patrick Claussen?
Almost certainly not, because there is a broad international effort underway at the moment to stop Iran's nuclear program. And we're having a lot of successes in our diplomacy with the EU, and quite the contrary to what Joe was just suggesting. In fact, the EU met yesterday to discuss the question of what tougher stances it's going to take against Iran and talked about a variety of sanctions that it would implement to press the Iranians. And we even got the Russians on board as saying that an Iranian nuclear program is unacceptable. So while there is a broad international effort underway to contain Iran's nuclear program with considerable successes, then the Israelis are satisfied that, in fact, this problem is being dealt with.
You say success, but that nuclear enrichment's gone forward. Rafsanjani says today that it's happening.
As Joe pointed out, on a relatively small scale. Look, the Iranians are tough negotiators, and they aren't going to cave in until they see that they've gotten as much as they can. And that's why we have to be prepared to press them. Mm-hmm. That's why IAEA Director Albaradei says that the use of force has to be there as a last option.
Joe Cirincione, let me ask you, off of John's call, is it possible for Israel to force the American hand here, to threaten to go in if the United States does not?
Israel's a complex country, just as the United States is, just as Iran is. There are various voices coming out of Iran. Some think a military option is disastrous. I just spoke to an Israeli this morning who told me that. Some, including some of the leadership associated with the Likud party, think that that's the only option. Right now, I would say the voices that favor military action are somewhat stronger than those who caution against it, but it's a complex situation. Israel by itself has some military capability, but not sufficient to really do the job. The U.S. is in a position to convince Israel not to exercise any Israeli military option. I believe that that's the administration's current position.
So the U.S. is capable of saying, you don't do it and we don't either. They're not leveraged into this by Israel saying, if you don't, we will.
It's not exactly, I mean, clearly Israel has serious interests here, and you hear a lot of parallels in Israeli statements that a nuclear Iran would represent an existential threat to the state of Israel, with the president saying that a nuclear Iran is intolerable. There's a lot of parallel interests, but I don't believe Israel's pulling the strings at this point.
Pat's calling from Georgetown, South Carolina. Pat, you're on the air.
Hello there. I am so concerned about this conversation. My son is active army. Mm-hmm. My husband was in the army, and we did live in Iran before the revolution. Mm-hmm. Also, my dad was in the army. I know what the military is all about. Bush has weakened our military position so badly. Our strength has been stretched. We don't have enough manpower. Who's going to want to get in the army? I mean, how are we going to get people to join up? It is not a popular thing to do. And I think we have two madmen, if you want to put it that way, one in Iran and one here in the United States.
Pat, our time is almost up. Patrick Clausen, let me put this capacity issue to you, and Pat knows it directly from her family. We hear every day about how overstretched the U.S. military is already. Is it mad to think about taking on another war like this?
The U.S. Army and the U.S. Marine Corps are stretched very badly in Iraq. Operations against Iran, as described by Cy Hirsch in his recent article, would be operations by the Air Force and by the Navy, which frankly are not badly stretched at the moment. So the operations against Iran that Cy Hirsch describes are air operations. It would be conducted by a different part of the U.S. military that's not particularly stretched at the moment.
Joe Cirincione, we've got half a minute. How do you see the odds at this point? A year from now, the U.S. at war with Iran or not?
Listen very carefully what Pat Clausen's saying. He's spinning another tale about how easy it would be to do this. There are a number of people in town talking like this. That's why people like me and Cy Hirsch are raising the flag at this point. We made this mistake with Iraq. We can't do it again. Right now, I think the odds are about 50-50 about a military strike on Iran within the next year. That's why it's so important. If Pat's right, if pressure counts, then let's use the pressure we have now to open up a dialogue with Iran. Let's have direct talks with Iran now to test once and for all whether we can talk them out of this nuclear program before we go to that ultimate option of war.
Not the end of this conversation, it's clear. We're grateful to both of you for being with us this hour. Patrick Clausen at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Mr. Clausen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Joseph Cirincione, Director of Nonproliferation at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Joe, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.